I'm glad to be back, and hopefully you are too. Welcome to the Parish of the Patriots. It's the 245th time, the meeting of the congregation. If you're new around these parts, we'd have a Christian-specific segment, roughly the halfway point of the show, and it is roughly, maybe sooner, maybe later, who knows. But it will. We do have that, so I advise you to stick around for that. Hopefully you will. Hopefully you. I think you'll like it. I don't think you'll be disappointed. I want to start this show off where we go rolling through the usual things that we roll through here on this show. If you haven't been catching my Daily Nationalist shows, particularly the show this past Friday and yesterday, which would be Monday, Sven has been moved to a different facility. On those shows, on the description pages, I do have his updated mailing information. I'm currently unable to get in touch with him. I use the email service and it's blocked, but my understanding is all his mail privileges is currently blocked. This isn't because he got into any trouble as far as anything he did. This was the result of the actions of people outside, and nobody from my understanding, none of y'all, nobody from the Radio Albion audience, but this is from the actions of assholes who don't know how to write and use some common sense or something like that. I mean, I don't really even know the specifics, but I do know it's not like Sven was being a problem. He was having no trouble with his fellow prisoners, with the staff, getting along fine with everybody. This isn't because he was being, you know, causing trouble or causing any kind of disruption. This is due to the actions of other people, which was completely outside of his control. So his mail privileges are currently suspended. I don't know when that's going to be lifted. When I find more information, I will, of course, share it with you. I generally do that on the Daily Nationalist shows, so hopefully you'll check that out. Go ahead and keep sending those notes to the new address, and hopefully they will get through at some point. Again, I'll periodically try to drop an email. I don't know if I'm on the list. Some people have been put, my understanding is some people have been put on a list because you're a threat to the democracy values of who the United Kingdom is, or whatever the hell, and they're not going to be allowed to contact me. Well, I don't know if I'm on that list or not. I have no idea, because right now everybody's blocked. But as I have updates, I will share them. Again, generally I share those on the Daily Nationalist show, but because it, you know, his address completely changing is obviously a pretty drastic change, I wanted to bring that up here. You can find that information on the Daily Nationalist, so just click on it. We got that information here in Radio Oven. Sure, and check that out. Continue to pray for a friend, my friend. I'm not going to get off into it. It's very concerning. My heart is troubled over Sven's situation. I continue to look forward to the day that he's released. You know, I don't know what his situation is going to look like when he gets out. Is going to be better than could be expected, because so many of y'all have been generous and donated, donated to support him. I know he appreciates it. I appreciate it on his behalf. I thank y'all. You know, but I don't know, things look like the first step is getting him out. You know, the first step is looking forward, and we're all working towards a day, hoping for the day when he's released. And then we will go from there. We got to roll on with this show. I do appreciate, you know, talking about giving. I know y'all only got so much to give. And if you get something out of this show, you know, particularly the Christian specific segment, if I'm being 100%, I realize the first part of the show is it's just kind of like me rambling. But if you get something out of the show, you know, put something in the offering plate. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. It is very much appreciated. If you look here on the show on Radio Albion and go through the description page, you know, I've got snail mail, Bitcoin, Monero, email address, drop your notes. If you've got different cryptocurrency, drop me a note. Nobody is. I don't think anybody's ever done that. But if you got shit coins, I will take your shit coins. I'm not proud. I'm poor. I will take whatever I can get and consider it a blessing from the Lord and be grateful for it. Don't ever think, you know, well, I wait till I can give some. I'm not expecting y'all to like break the bank, you know. I don't think that highly of myself. I do appreciate everything y'all do. With that having been said, let's get off into this week's listener supporter mailbag. What do we got here? Gramps, wishing you a belated happy Halloween. Here is to the kids having fun and taking back this once sacred holiday of All Hallows Eve in the best of Christian traditions. Love, no homo, Jay. And thank you very much. Belated or not, I do appreciate it. Halloween is like that marker, you know, the year is winding down. You get older, it goes by so damn fast. Anyway, we're already now, we're coming up on Thanksgiving. I mean, we're only several weeks away from Thanksgiving. And then boom, Christmas. It doesn't help that like in September, August, even now, I think they start, these stores start rolling out the Christmas stuff. Or so I've been told. I really don't go to the store. Well, I go like the grocery store. Somebody told me something the other day about, I don't even remember what they were saying, but they were saying something about Walmart. And I just laughed. I'm like, I don't go to Walmart. They're like, what do you mean? You don't? And I don't go to Walmart. Unless like I'm in a position where like I have literally no choice, you know. Tony, support received. No note there, but I did want to let you know I got it. And of course, I, as always, I do very much appreciate it. GPD, how's the weather and your health? Speaking of Israel, would it be adequate to bring up 2 Chronicles chapter 19, verses 1, 2, and 3? God bless Triangle Whip. P.S. Say hello to Sven with this part of this donation, and I'll get that. I always use the Gives and Go. It doesn't bother me to use my real name on there, obviously. I'll send it to him and on your behalf. And thank you on his behalf. Weather, we're actually in fall. Summer's over. We're having our 2 weeks, what seems like our 2 weeks of fall. We're having our 2 weeks of fall. I was sitting here thinking of a funny story, but I'm not going to share it. Not today. I always laugh, though, because like here in Texas, it's like we have 2 weeks. It seems like we have like 2 weeks of fall and 2 weeks of spring. We either have winter or summer. And of course, when I say winter, people like Dr. Johnson that live up in Yankee Land, they'd be laughing at us because they're like, you call that winter. But it's winter. On the health thing, thank you for bringing that up because I keep forgetting to do so. I did get the results from my last cancer scan. Aside from the laundry list of crap that's wrong with me just because of age, as far as cancer stuff goes, the only thing that turned up is these other types of skin cancer, which the cancer doctor is sitting there basically trying to scold me because I haven't gone to a dermatologist to get these cut off. They're not melanoma ones. That's why I'm like not freaking out about it, but I do need to go get them cut off. I need to get that done for the end of the year, even though I still don't think I've hit the deductible on my crappy Obamacare insurance that has like an $8,700 deductible. He always gets mad at me because he wants me to do these scans, like, I don't know, like three or four times a year. And it's like these scans, you know, I have like an $8,700 deductible and these scans are like $3,400 a piece, you know, a pop. And you're like, well, I know it's expensive, but this is your health you're talking about. So, dude, y'all ain't going to do it for free. What, you want me to shit $3,400? Anyway, y'all don't want to hear about me being poor. The important thing is no cancers right now. Everything's good. Like I say, except for these other kind of cancers that are not really that big a deal. I mean, I got to get them cut off, but I mean, dermatologists hack that off in the office. I need to get around to that. As far as the other 2 Chronicles, chapter 19, 1, 2, 3, whatever you say there, Brian. You know, I think I see where you're going with that. But, somebody was telling me a story here recently about they'd gone to a church and they got to hear the preacher go on and on about the only reason America is still doing so well is because, you know, this is the one country that supports Israel. Because America's blessing Israel, God is blessing America. I don't know. I can't. No, not today. I can't deal with all that. I don't refuse to deal with that. Is it crazy? Some of these churches, these Protestant churches that really go this gung-ho for Israel. And I always wonder, you know, I mean, it's like some little church you never heard of and they're this gung-ho. And I'm thinking, you know, do preachers in these little remote churches, do they get a check? I don't know. I can promise you. I don't get a check. The Israel lobby never sends the Parish of the Patriot. They don't drop anything in the plate. Ungrateful. Okay. I went by church. I probably told this story before. I'm getting old and I'm doing that old person thing where you just repeat stories. And I was going along and I saw a church on the side of the road. I don't even remember where I was exactly or what I was doing, but I remember it sticks in my mind. I was driving along and there was a church and they had three flagpoles up here. And on the left-hand flagpole, they had the American flag flying in front of this church. I already don't like that. And on the far right-hand flagpole, they had the Texas flag flying in front of the church. I don't really have a problem with that. And on the center flagpole, I shit you not, they had the inverted triangle, satanic Israel flag flying on the center. It's like, Thank you for advertising that I wouldn't go there. No way, no how. GPD, seems to me that America has been fighting wars for Israel for so long, it's little wonder that the IDF is hesitant to enter into Gaza. That's from Mr. T. You know, there's... I'm kind of refraining, and I was talking about Day of the National shows, and I thought about after the fact, after I've already posted the show up now, it's a little too late, but on my Friday Day of the National show, the cover picture I used is probably a little deceptive, really didn't have anything, doesn't have so much to do, rather than have anything to do with like the Israeli-Palestine, you know, Palestinian conflict, as it were, you know, and I realized I probably didn't pick a very good picture to use as a cover picture for that show, because it really had to do with speech laws in the West and in the UK in particular. And if I wasn't a good choice, I'm trying not to cover that too much. I'm letting Dr. Johnson cover that because he knows more what the hell he's talking about than I do. I mean, I'm not talking about it at all, but I'm not really focusing. And honestly, I think y'all might, I kind of worry that y'all are tired of hearing about the same old thing, you know? And again, that's Dr. Johnson's forte and his expertise. So I've been making a conscious effort to kind of let him take over and talk about that. You know, like I say, I don't want y'all to get bored with our content here. And I realize that he's probably trying. Just because I don't think it's like Dr. Johnson or my own content is going downhill. But I mean, you get tired of listening to the same two guys. And I realize that that's where we're at. You know, and I'm trying to keep it as spicy as I can without getting too spicy. Have some fun. What the hell were we even talking about? Oh, yeah, no, the IDF going into Gaza. Well, you know, the thing is, like, people in America especially, and I think people in the West in general, you know, they have this view of war like it's like a TV show, like a movie. And I see these idiots talking about, yeah, the IDF's going to go in there and clear out Hamas. Let me tell you something. If you're talking about urban conflict, even if you carpet bomb everybody to oblivion, at some point in time, you've got to roll in there with soldiers. I mean, you got to say, it always comes, I don't care how much high tech you got, I don't care how much kind of whiz bang modern day weaponry you got. At the end of the day, you got to send a guy with a gun in there. You've got to send people in there. You got to send foot soldiers in. And you know, urban conflict is never going to be an easy thing. It just ain't. I saw some videos and it was kind of entertaining, you know, book entertaining. It's never entertaining watching conflicts, because you always want to remember I almost fell into the same trap I was just criticizing. You know, you're watching people die, you know, and that, you always want to remember that. It's not a game, you know, but it was humorous. Let me put it that way. It was humorous just looking at the poor strategy. And what I'm talking about, obviously, Netanyahu is in, you know, he's in a precarious political position. He really is. A lot of Israeli, a lot of people in Israel blame him for this whole thing. You know, he's not sitting pretty with this conflict. And so, of course, if he just starts sending their army in there and all of these people start coming back in body bags, you know, he liable to get like run out on a rail. So they're very hesitant to do this. And this is evident because I was watching some videos of Hamas guys blowing up Israeli tanks, and you got these tanks rolling through here. And these guys are hiding in the bushes and they're running out there and throwing grenades down the barrels or setting bombs on the back of the tanks. And you watch that and you're like, well, how can that happen? Well, because you never ever look, tanks are designed, you know, tactically speaking, even I know this and I'm just a regular dude. Tanks are always designed as infantry support. In other words, you always will have, if you look at the old war films like from World War II or whatever, and you will all, you know what you always see? You always see tanks and they're surrounded by infantry. You know, you got tanks and then there's infantry around them. There's a reason for that. The tanks are basically support for the infantry and vice versa. Tanks by themselves are basically useless because stuff like that can happen. A tank is just one big blind spot. You guys, it's one huge blind spot. They can hang cameras on it or whatever the hell, but it's still going to be one big blind spot. And guys can just run up and set a bomb on it, throw a bomb up under the turret and blow it up. That's why whenever you watch like competent tank use, you are going to see the tanks surrounded by infantry. See, ain't nobody going to run up and throw a grenade down the barrel of the tank when you got a bunch, you know, you got 20 dudes with rifles surrounding it. That's the way it's supposed to work. And of course, they're not doing that because, you know, they're trying to avoid massive casualties because, like I say, Netanyahu is not in a good political position with this. And a bunch of Israeli soldiers coming back in body bags and filling up morgues is going to be probably the political end for the guy. Let's keep going. What do we got here? Grandpa Dan. And you know, this is one of those cases where I'm editing quite a bit out of here. I have read the first part of my first part of your deal, and I hope things continue to go well for you and your family. I understand what all you got going, and I hope things will continue to go well. And it is amazing. They keep talking about the good economy, and we all know better. But anyway, I just wanted you to, I don't want you to think like I skipped over that part and didn't even read it. I'm just not sharing. As y'all well know, I don't share stuff that I think is too personal or too personally identifying for y'all. But it isn't like I don't care about that or something. I don't want y'all to think. I don't think y'all think that. Grandpa Dan, one thing I am taking as a white pill is how over the top a lot of the modern lies are and how quickly they are being disproven. I'm seeing sloppy propagandists use AI to generate images to support their case, and their images just look bad. Like so bad, non-expert can look for more than 5 seconds and be like, hey, why are there all these extra arms coming out of these people's bodies? I am also hopeful that as people see the comedically dumb lies, they will look back at prior lies and see those as well. Also, the other lack of support for military action and the videos of Gen Z flatly against the draft. It's starting to look like if they want to do a draft, it will have to be like in Ukraine, where they're grabbing and dragging guys off the street. That's a hard sell here, but how much harder to sell will it be to do that, to fight in an overseas conflict that the U.S. has no reason, no basis to be in? I appreciate what you're doing to keep Radio Albin going with Sven away. Run request is if you and Dr. Johnson could have a talk about the likelihood of eventual military action involving the U.S. directly. I know your stance is that World War III has already started, and I agree with you, but I think we are all thinking about what could actually make things get really hot. Your brother in Christ, Mike, I do really appreciate it. There's a lot to cover here. I guess I'll just kind of unpack this one thing at a time. The sloppy propagandists, the lies. One of the things that really has stuck out at me is, you know, how like for years people like us basically that have pointed out that like the Israel lobby, in generally speaking, the Israel lobby has a whole lot of influence. Let's say they own the government and the politicians. I mean, they're owned by the Jewish lobby. And of course, in saying that, we've all been condemned as evil anti-Semites who want to, want to gas 6 trillion Jews or something. We've been condemned as anti-Semites and, oh, you're horrible. You're promoting these tropes and these canards. And one of the amazing things through all of this is how all of these politicians in the West, here in the U.S. with the Republicans and the Democrats, U.K., Western Europe, you have all these governments and literally every single politician falling all over themselves, you know, unilaterally supporting Israel. We have all watched these countries, you know, if a stray missile can be blamed on Russia that hits an apartment complex, then Putin should be charged with war crimes. And now you have Israel carpet bombing Gaza, and you have all of these politicians lining up, bowing down, promising more money and unilateral support in Israel. I think in the UK, their laws are now at the point to where if you say anything that is not unilateral, unwavering support for Israel, and that could be interpreted as supporting Hamas, you could be deemed a terrorist and thrown in prison for it. And in that context, I'm like, well, I think the argument is over. No, really, to say that the Jewish lobby, the Israel lobby, basically owns these governments and owns these politicians, I think the debate, there's no debate about that. In fact, it's one of those things I'm not even planning to mention anymore. I really don't. I'm just mentioning it to point out, and I'm mentioning it now to highlight anybody who doesn't get that now at this point is just willfully stupid. You know, I mean, they just are. I mean, that debate is over. We people like us who have pointed this out for years and got condemned and you know, lied about and defamed or whatever, slandered for being evil anti-Semites and this and that and promoting tropes and canards and blah, 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 blah. That debate is over because anybody with any eyes can see all of these politicians, all of these governments in the West, one after the other, falling all over themselves, demanding that everybody support Israel. Like here in the U.S. is ridiculous. You got the Democrats that are like, we're going to give, you know, $10 billion to Israel. And the Republicans are like, that's chump change. We're giving $50 billion to Israel. Oh, yeah, maybe we'll just give. And you have these politicians that have literally come out and promised to support Israel, even if the U.S. were, as long as the U.S. exists in any way, shape, or form, they will support. We will be supporting Israel. Like if the people have to be enslaved to do it, we will give every last dime and support to Israel. Literally saying this, as long as the U.S. exists in any way, shape, or form, our support for Israel is undying. The debate is over. They have admitted. They have come out and publicly announced that what people like us have said for years is true. They've admitted, if you've pointed this out and people have called you names over it, you, congratulations, you are now vindicated because they have come out and not only admitted it, but publicly announced it with pride. That is no longer up for debate. Like I say, I don't plan to even bring it up because at this point, it's just bringing up, you know, the grass is green. They're saying it. There's no need for me to say it. They're announcing that, yes, they are bought and paid for by the Israel lobby. There's no point in even talking about it any longer. The draft. Next point, the draft. I read an article here a while back and an opinion piece. I don't even remember where, but the person writing the piece made the point that they're looking at the social fabric, which is just frayed and tattered to the point of you can't believe there's anything holding any of it together now. And the person writing this piece, they put forth, they said, if the U.S. government tries to institute a draft, that'll be it. That will light this country off. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. Because there ain't much holding it together. Like I say, Americans are fine with wars as long as it doesn't affect them. They'll sit there and cheerlead these wars and put the Ukraine flag or the Israel flag or the American flag on their profile pics on Twitter. They'll do that. But if it's going to affect them personally, all of a sudden, that's a different case. The draft would be a very, very risky move. As far as lighting off this society, one of the things I said, you know, how's that going to work? You know, they send out draft notices. I mean, they make all the young people register for the draft now. I mean, they have for years. They started that back when I was a teenager. And you have to register for the draft. Selective service, they call it. Only you don't get to select not to serve. Is another one. Everything this government does is an inverted lie. It's select. You got to register for selective service. Well, I select not to serve. Well, you're not allowed to do that. All these young people have to select to serve. You got a lot of people, you know, all across the country from every demographic, whether it's your economic demographic, racial demographics, regardless, there's a lot of people that have, you know, They got a lot of anger built up, and a lot of that anger is towards, you know, the government, towards the system. They can't even put their finger on it. There's no, things are getting worse. But how do they direct that anger? You know, how do they direct that anger? And a lot of things I think that keeps things just kind of, you know, at least as chill as they are without getting completely like the entire country's burning itself down is the fact that people don't have anywhere because the democracy system is set up. Like if you had a king, everybody knows who to be mad at. And they're surround the castle and with pitchforks, you know, torches like you see in old movies. But under the democracy, you're under like, I don't know, millions of little micro tyrants. Who do you direct your anger at? You know? Oh, well, you know, nobody ever takes responsibility. You say, I don't like this government policy. Well, who do you complain to? Who do you blame? Your congressperson? I mean, who? However, if they send out draft notices and you blow it off, and I think a lot of people would, and what are they going to do? They're going to send couple of military guys to come pick your kid up, to pick this young adult up. You see, now all of a sudden people got someone to direct their anger at, is what I'm saying. That's one of the things I think that it really puts, and I think they know this. That's why the draft would be like a last ditch, desperate thing. Like they got nothing else to lose. Because what happens is you're going to have to, if people don't show up for the draft, they got to send somebody out, you know? And if things go the way I predict they could go, if they did that, the local cops are going to be pretty quick. It ain't going to take very long. The local cops are going to be like, we ain't going to go serve these draft notices. Y'all go do it. Y'all go send a couple of Army recruiters out there. Because what you're doing now, you give people something to focus that anger on. Now they got somebody. You got these two guys saying you got to go die for Israel, the Ukraine, or whoever the hell else. Very, very dangerous thing. And on the final point, I do need to get together with Dr. J and do another roundtable. I've been thinking about this, actually, in my head. It isn't much of a roundtable if it's just two of us. I know Dr. J's always got a lot of stuff going on. I already appreciate him. He's taken up doing the full Thursday Daily Nationals by himself, obviously, because Sven's not here. And I know from doing the Monday and Friday shows solo that it's a lot more difficult to do those by yourself when you don't have someone to work with. And, I already appreciate everything he's doing now. I kind of hate to bother him about it. Also, what is it too much of a round table when there's just two of us? But we do need to. I'm looking for the opportunity, like something, a really good topic on doing it. Maybe what you suggested. I don't know. You get into some of this stuff and he's just kind of like me going along. I guess I can ask the questions on y'all's behalf and ask him, bounce them off of him. I don't know. Yeah, I do. I do want to get the opportunity to sit down and have a show with Dr. Johnson. I've been looking forward to, because we absolutely, well, hopefully, I don't know how it'll play out, but in the back of my mind, one of these days when Sven gets out, I really want to sit down and have a discussion with him and talk about what all he's been through. But I don't know how that all is going to shake out when he gets out, because like I say, my Friday show, I get into it, but the UK, their laws are getting crazy now on their crackdown on what people are going to be allowed to say. So I don't know how that's going to work out. We just got to get him out first. But to answer the question, yes, absolutely. Want to sit down with Dr. J again. It's always fun. And I'm sure he wouldn't have a problem doing that, because it is always fun to have, to have a discussion. I just want to come up with something nice and fresh. I'm sure we'll get some opportunities to do so. So, yeah, that gets us through the listener supporter mailbag. And really, we need to get into the Christian specific segment, which means it's a good listener supporter mailbag. I like it when the listener supporter mailbag basically gives me what to talk about in the first part of the show, because the Christian specific segment, I really don't have a problem. That's not a problem. First part of the show, sometimes, I don't know what I'm even going to talk about, because, before. I can find all kinds of things to talk about. See, now I'm doing the Monday and the Friday Daily Nationalist. So like current events and news topics, I'm covering them on those shows. So I really, that's stuff I would normally use in the first part of this show. So if you're wondering why the first part of the Parish of the Patriots kind of sucks these days, that's why. I don't think it sucks. Hopefully you don't either. But I do appreciate it. I really appreciate y'all's feedback. Appreciate your financial support, putting something to the plate. Of course, it all helps. Believe me, I really appreciate it. And like I say, I appreciate the feedback, because this gives me other things to talk about. I don't have to sit here and think, if y'all ask me about something, I might have thought of that, but I'm thinking, well, I've talked about that. Y'all don't want to hear it. I have to guess what y'all want to discuss. This feedback allows me, I can blame y'all. If other people are listening, they're like, I don't care about any of this crap. Why are you rambling on? Be like, hey, listeners asked for it. If you want me to talk about something else, put something in the plate and drop me a note. We're going to go ahead and get into the Christian specific segment without any further ado. Again, if you're new, stick around for it. I think it'll be more entertaining than you think it will. Unless you just, full on don't want to hear it, whatever. I've warned you. You know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. And it's been the pattern lately. I'm just going to kind of have a thinking. Once again, this week, we're going to kind of just hit a wide variety of different, just different takes on things. Some of them you might get something out of, some of them you may not. Hopefully, you will find them all informative and entertaining. That is at least always the goal. Right before I was doing this show, I mean, like, I had woke up this morning because I record the show on Mondays, in the mornings rather, and usually over the weekend and normally on Saturdays. And I woke up early this morning. And in fact, I mean, I'm still laying in bed. I didn't even fix the first cup of coffee. And that's a crapshoot. When I haven't had my first cup of coffee, there ain't no telling where I'm going to go in any of my thoughts. But I'm laying there in bed. And for whatever reason, I was thinking about, as you all know, I talk a lot, quite often at least, about how I believe, you know, the Lord teaches us about himself, things about himself and our relationship with him, you know, through things in this world, through experiences that we have in this world. And it occurred to me, and I was laying there thinking about the creation of man, our relationship with God, and how that relates to our relationship, you know, how we relate, you know, with women. Now, y'all familiar with, you know, how we are told that man was created, you know, God created man in his own image. Men were created in the image of God. And then when God created woman, he actually created woman from man. Well, we are created as, you know, in God's image. As Christian believers, when we come to Christ, I guess this is getting to kind of the heaviness of accepting Jesus as your Lord and Savior versus this, it's this no big deal, light, treated like it's there's no weight behind it that the MCC does. Because when we become Christian believers, and if we look at how God created woman, he took a part of man and put it into woman. Well, now man, God created man in his own image. When we come to Christ, we seek out and God essentially takes a piece of himself via the Holy Spirit and puts the Holy Spirit within us, just as he took a piece of man and created woman. So when we come to Christ, it's a very, very important thing because we're talking about a piece of the Lord within us. Paul warned, he said, would I take the members of Christ, talking about his own body, his own physical bodies, would I take the members of Christ and join it with a prostitute? You see, you're taking a piece of God within you when you accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior. This is a much heavier thing than if you just say these words, then you're going to heaven and everything's going to be great. It is a heavy thing because you are taking God into your heart through the Holy Spirit, via the Holy Spirit into you. Now, as Paul points out, you have this heaviness because God is within you. Now, it's not just your body. It's not just, you know, you have incorporated God into yourself. Now, I want to keep going with this for just a minute. I'm not going to spend too much time on it. But I was thinking about, you know, again, the heaviness of it. In the Bible, we're often given this representation of a bride. In the Old Testament, he talks about Israel being his bride. And you know, Jesus used metaphors and illustrations talking about, you know, the bride and the bridegroom and so forth. Now, again, this is a heavy thing because if you think about it, you're taking on this responsibility. And Christian believers, we have a responsibility. And again, as an example, by using women as a part of this illustration, if somebody comes to you and tells you about, I don't know, a woman that works at a place in town that you're familiar with, and they're talking to you about this woman, and they tell you that, you know, she basically runs around and has sex with anybody that's willing in town, and she's a real slut and a real whore. And you know, you might be like, oh, well, that's, you know, that's not good. You know, you raise an eyebrow and be like, wow, I didn't know she was like that or whatever. You know, but it doesn't have a real meaning. You might not approve of it, but it doesn't have like a deep personal meaning to you. At the same time, however, on the other hand, if somebody comes to you and tells you that your wife is running around having sex with everybody in town that will let her, that's going to bring you to wrath. And again, we're told in the Bible that God is a jealous God. The Lord is a jealous God. Well, this makes sense because he loves us. Again, some rando slut in town that runs around and would screw a snake if she could catch it, that doesn't really mean a lot to you. Again, you may not approve of it, but it doesn't have a whole lot of meaning. However, if people are coming to you and telling you that your wife is that slut, then that's a problem. And it's going to bring you to wrath. You're going to be angry. You're going to be upset, aren't you? Because that's your wife. You're supposed to have a bond. You're supposed to have a level of trust. You've made a commitment one to the other. In the Old Testament, God is brought to wrath because, again, he describes Israel, his people, as his bride. And she is, his wife has gone off a-whoring. She's gone a-whoring all over town. It gets real graphic, the illustration that is used in this manner in the Old Testament. She's gone whoring and prostituting herself to every god in town. She's a slut. And it brings God to wrath. It brings God to anger. Now, he's not mad about the other nations that are chasing after other gods, because that's just like hearing about the rando slut in town. It doesn't really have anything to do with him. Like I say, I'm not going to, you know, there's not really a whole lot of depth to go into with that, but it's something to think about. It's something I'll probably continue to think about further and maybe come back to it at some point in time. But I just thought I'd share it with you because it just popped into my head before doing the show this morning. But it is an interesting thing. And again, it just goes to show that I believe that, you know, in a lot of the physical things we experience in this world, because our whole point in this life is to grow spiritually and understand God and understand, you know, how he works, so that we're as prepared as we can be when we enter the real life, when this prologue is over and the real story begins. And I do. I just think there are a lot of things in this world where he teaches us. And I thought that one popped into my head this morning, and I just thought I'd share it with you. You know, I mean, it is a heavy thing. And as I said, again, not just to beat a dead horse, but I really, it wears me out the way the MCC treats accepting Jesus as your Lord and Savior as this really light thing. If they can get somebody in the door and they can get somebody to say the words and repeat the words after them or whatever the case may be, they check them off the list and keep on trucking like they have done their job. Like, and it's not. It's a really serious decision. Now, of course, we all live in this screwed up fallen world, which is just getting more and more insane. We live in extremely evil times. I mean, that's just a fact. And as believers, we're holding down the fort. Y'all know how I feel about any mention of the rapture and that nonsense. It's ridiculous if you're a rapture believer. I want to tell you, you're gonna have to come to terms with that. Ain't the case, you know. Just like somebody coming and telling you ain't no Santa Claus when you was a little kid. I'm gonna tell you, ain't no rapture. Don't be waiting around. Be waiting around for no rapture. I was thinking the other day though about my own motivations. You know, I reflect on myself. You have to reflect on yourself from time to time to remember what you're doing and why you're doing it, and to recenter yourself. You know, because I get out there sometimes. Look, I know it. I get out there sometimes. You got to get recentered. You know, you got to focus and reflect on yourself a little bit and remember, okay, why am I doing what I'm doing? And I was thinking about how it can get to feeling, you know, for people like this is all pointless. You know, I mean, no matter what you do, the world around you keeps going down the toilet. The society you live in, and it's especially true because we live in a society that is just, I mean, it's rolling downhill like a snowball headed for hell. And it could feel like there's no point. You know, what's the point? This is eventually going to get, I'm eventually going to make the point, which is going to be like the opposite of the rapture idea. That's why I kind of brought that up. I think I'm going to get there. I think I'm going to successfully do that. You live in a society and you're constantly holding on to the truth. You see, I believe the truth itself has value. I would tell people that, you know, if you're looking like to save the U.S., you know, to turn America around and bring America back to Jesus and get it back on the straight, I think it's a fool's errand. I have really, and this is a journey for myself as well. I have long abandoned, I personally, I believe the notion of quote unquote waking people up is a fool's errand. I used to not think that. This is where I have come to be now. I think that is a fool's errand. If you think there's going to be some mass awakening and, you know, white people around the country are going to stand up for themselves and retake control of their destiny, I don't think it's going to happen. So if you don't think that's going to happen, why do we keep doing what we do? You see, I believe the truth itself has inherent value. Now I'm fixing to get to the point, which is like the opposite of the whole rapture idea. You see, our duty when the Lord finds us, whether we happen to be on this rock, when he decides to end this entire exercise and rip off the curtain that separates the temporal realm from the eternal, or whether we meet him naturally and we pass through that curtain when we leave this world. We want the Lord to find us doing his work. Whether we have any chance or not of success is irrelevant. Remember the Alamo. You know, it's kind of like that. And I thought of an illustration to kind of, I think this kind of makes your point. Say there was a man, and you think of this in like old biblical times. Say there was a man, a wealthy man, and he owned like quite a few vineyards, some large and some small. And he owned all these vineyards spread out all over the place. And because obviously he couldn't believe, you know, he wasn't going to be everywhere at once, and he was going to go on a journey and take care of business, you know, he would put his servants in charge of his vineyards. Now, imagine if you were the servant put in charge of a vineyard, and it's just a small vineyard. You know, it's got a wall around it, you know, but it's not a huge vineyard. It's a humble little vineyard, but you're the guy in charge, and there's you and, say, five other dudes, and y'all are working this vineyard for your master while he's gone. Now, while your master's gone, and your master's enemy comes and begins besieging and tearing down the walls on various vineyards and trampling over the vineyards. And the various servants react in different ways. Now, when it comes your turn and the enemy comes against your vineyard, you're there with five dudes. You know, it's you and five dudes. Y'all, there's six of you. I guess you'd say five. Let's say four of the dudes. There's five servants. And you five servants are there holding the wall. And you look out here, and this enemy is out here with an army of 2,000 men. And you're sitting there going, well, we don't have any chance. You know, we don't have any chance of, you know, successfully defending this. There's only five of us here. What are you going to do? Are you going to surrender and join the ranks of your master's enemy? Or are you going to do like the guys at the Alamo? Are you going to just say, well, you're going to look at the other guys and say, well, there's five of us here. Let's make our stand. We're going to make our stand here. And, you know, they overrun us. Now, to continue with this, let's say the master returns. The master returns with his army, 20,000 men armed for battle, men of valor, warriors. And they know they come in as they come upon the enemy who has besieged your little vineyard. And here's you five guys standing there with rocks and spears trying to beat them off the walls, just trying to hold the walls. Is he going to mock you? Is he going to be like, you idiots? You had no chance. No. You're going to be held in honor. He's going to look and say, these are men of honor. They stood with no chance. They knew they had no chance. And those men stood. If he doesn't make it in time and the enemy tramples down the wall and kills you, he's not going to sit there and mock you in your death and say, well, these guys were stupid. They had no chance. Now, the opposite of that choice is, what are you going to do? You're going to surrender. You're going to try to save your life. So you surrender and you are taken into the ranks of your enemy. You've surrendered, you give up, and you're absorbed into the ranks of your enemy, whether it's as a slave or you just give yourself over and do his work and say, hey, I'll be one of your soldiers even. You're surrendered and taken into the ranks of the enemy. Now, how's that going to go for that servant when the master returns, finds the vineyard trampled over? He says, what happened to my servants? Oh, they're in the ranks of the enemy. When he brings his army in and slaughters and slays every last one in the camp of his enemy, woe to the man that finds himself into the camp. He went to save his life. He surrendered to the enemy because he wanted to save his life. And in so doing, he lost his life. This is the choice we face. This goes back to this heaviness of choosing to be a man of God. It is not something to be taken lightly. There's a reason people would come to Jesus and say, I want to follow you. And he would essentially run them off because he's like, look, you ain't ready for this. You ain't ready for what this entails. This is a heavy decision, not something you do lightly. If God comes, when the master returns, it doesn't matter that you're fighting a losing battle. In fact, that is to your glory. He comes back and finds you trying to fend the wall off with no chance of winning, but you're still trying to hold the territory. He's not going to mock you. What man would do that? Would you? If you were in that position, you would be like, oh my gosh, who knew I had servants with this kind of honor, with this kind of fortitude? No, you would slay your enemies and you would say, bring these men up here, because I'm going to promote them to a position of honor. I'm going to put them into a position. I'm going to put them in authority over larger vineyards, because you know what? I know I can trust these guys. Anybody who would stand there against 2,000 men, there's only five of them to defend my property and essentially to defend my honor, even though they had no chance. You know what? I don't have to worry about these guys. They're not going to steal from me. They're not going to undermine me. They're not going to try to cheat me when I'm not looking. These guys, I can put them in charge of a large thing, of more things. And again, the one who makes the decision to try to save their lives, to try to spare themselves by surrendering to the enemy. You know, when the army comes and slaughters the camp of the enemies, you know, they're not going to be sitting around asking people their circumstances. You're in the camp of the enemy. And again, that's that pattern you see. Those that try to save their life will lose it. In trying to save their lives, they lose their life because they had to enter the camp of the enemy, and that's where they were found. See, it's like an opposite take of the rapture, where you don't have to make any of these tough decisions. You sit around and do nothing. You don't have to defend the wall. I'm just going to sit here in the vineyard and the master will come and save me. In fact, I'm just going to get teleported out of here. It's a silly and childish view. I don't have to beat that horse to death. Don't get me started on it. But it is an opposite take. You see, you're going to have to make hard choices. Where you are making hard choices now. You may not even realize it, but with your choice to place value in the truth. You know, I get on one of my black pill kind of sounding things about the world around us. Sometimes people will be like, well, why do you keep doing what you're doing? You know, if you don't think you're going to single-handedly save the white race or whatever the case, other people's motivations may be, you know, then what's the point? What are you doing? And my answer to that is I believe the truth itself has intrinsic value. When the Lord returns, I want him to find me defending the wall. Even though, yeah, it's pointless. I'm going to tell you it's pointless. You and the five guys defend the wall. You're going to look at the other guys and be like, we can beat these guys, because you're just insulting them then. But you're going to hold the wall anyway. And I think we are well served if we have that attitude. We're going to keep on going. We keep moving right along. Let's just jump over. I wanted to read a few verses out of the book of Acts, chapter 5. Verse 1 through, I don't know, several here. verse 1 through several. 1 until I get tired of reading here. It's not going to be a whole lot. So what's going on here? The early church starting people all enthusiastic. There's a lot of passion going on. And people are going out and buying, and selling like land, selling their possessions, and putting everything into the community fund. They're building up a community. They're putting everything together, so that they're taking care of one another as a society within a corrupt and fallen, you know, nation. They're building a community. I often hear morons try to say, you see, this is communism, but it wasn't communism because nobody was forced to do it. They chose to do this of their own will. They were selling their possessions to help each other out, putting it in a community fund and working towards a common goal. Now, picking up at verse 1 of chapter 5, but a certain man named Ananias with Sapphira, his wife, sold a possession and kept back part of the price, his wife also being privy to it, and brought a certain part and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why hath Satan filled thine heart to lie to the Holy Ghost and to keep back part of the price of the land? Whilst it remained, was it not thine own? And after it was sold, was it not in thine own power? Why hast thou conceived this thing in thine heart? Thou hast not lied unto men, but unto God. And Ananias, hearing these words, fell down and gave up the ghost, and great fear came on them that heard these things. Now they wind up carrying him out, and here in a little bit, his wife comes in, because this is all going down. His wife isn't there. She shows up later. We pick that up at verse 7, and it was about the space of 3 hours after when his wife, not knowing what was done, came in, and Peter answered unto her, "Tell me whether ye sold the land for so much?" And she said, "Yea, for so much." Then Peter said unto her, "How is it that ye have agreed together to tempt the Spirit of the Lord? Behold, the feet of them which have buried thy husband are at the door, and shall carry thee out." Then she fell down straightway at his feet and yielded up the ghost. And the young men came in and found her dead, and carrying her forth, buried her by her husband. Now, I thought it'd be interesting to try to answer Peter's question of why would you do this? You know, Peter says, well, what prompted you to do this? I mean, you had the land. Why, you owned the land. I used the term a land. We're going to say it was a piece of land here for the sake of discussion. Why, you owned this piece of land, you know, it was yours. You know, nobody was taking it from you. We weren't coming on and saying, you have to sell this and give us the money. We were not doing that. You know, don't really care. While it was yours, it was yours. You know, nothing, you know, no problem. And he says, why, after you sold it and got the money, you had all the money. Why not just keep all the money for yourself? Or for that matter, if you just want to give part of it, come before the apostles and say, you know, I'm just using money numbers for our own sakes for the discussion. You know, come to the apostles and say, hey, I have this piece of land. I sold it for $50,000. I want to give y'all $25,000. I don't think there was a problem here. The problem was they came forth and said, we sold a piece of land for $25,000 and we are giving it all to you. But they sold it for $50,000 and kept the other half for themselves. The money is not the issue. The problem is they chose to lie to the Holy Spirit. They chose to lie. But Peter said, why would you do this? Of course, his wife comes in later and she gets the benefit of the doubt. Peter's like, did you sell that land for $25,000? Is that true? Yeah, we sold it for $25,000. He knew she was in on it. She fell down, said the same fate as her husband. Why would you do this? What moved you to conspire to lie? Why lie? You know, just keep the money. He says, the money was yours. When you sold it, just keep the money. I'm not telling you have to give us the money. What would prompt you to lie? Let's seek to figure that question out, because they didn't really answer it. They fell down and died. So it's up to us who are reading about this to try to answer this question. Now, many years ago, I attended regular churches. When I was a kid and when I was a young adult, I attended regular church services, several different churches. And, you know, that was before things had got, like, insane, you know, total MCC land that we're at today, because obviously I'm getting old. But one of the observations and one of the things I've learned is if you attend a regular church, nothing will bring out human nature like a church building project, whether it's we're going to build a new church, whether we're going to build a family life center, we're going to build a new auditorium, whatever the case may be, we're going to build a new daycare, whatever. Nothing will bring out the worst in people. You watch this, sit around. If you go to a regular church, if there's a new building project come up, get ready, because you're going to see, I guarantee you are going to see the worst in people. It is going to bring out, it will bring out the absolute worst. I can assure you, bring out the absolute worst behavior in people. It is an amazing thing to behold. So as an illustration, I'm going to give you a story. I was a small child. I mean, little kid. The Bible I use, I read out of for y'all. I lost the page on the front, but there was a page and said, this Bible is a gift, and it was a gift to me. And it had my age on. I think I was 7 years old when I got this Bible. And the story I'm fixing to tell, I was probably about the time I got this Bible, probably about 7 years old. Needless to say, my old Bible's falling apart. I think that's kind of cool, you know. We read out of a Bible that's just falling to pieces. Anyway, I was a small child. And, you know, like most kids, I didn't feel like going to church, but my folks would drag me to church. Y'all probably were there too. Anyway, the church we were attending, they had decided to undertake a building project. we are going to build a new church. We're going to build a brand new church. It's going to be fancy because we're growing. We're growing. This church is just too small. It's just too old. Now, in my opinion, the truth was, you see, the Church of Christ in town, they had just built a new church. And the church I was going to, they want to get left behind. See, there's always like, you know, there's always like this competition between denominations, especially when it comes to Protestants. You know, there is the Church of Christ, the Baptists, the Lutherans, all of these Protestant denominations. There's always like this status competition. It's a funny thing because the same Catholic church in the town I grew up in, the same Catholic church is there that was there when I was a kid. In fact, they never moved. They're in the same old church. It worked fine for them. So, you know, the real motivation was the Church of Christ had built a brand new building. We couldn't be left behind. You know, we got to stay up, got to keep up with the Joneses. They undertook a building project because this building we're in is just too old. It's funny because after they did build the new church, attendance went down. It was always empty. And they let some other lesser denomination, lower on the social economic totem pole, they let them take over that church, or they sold it to them. I don't know. I was a little kid. And, you know, to my knowledge, I think that church is still standing today. So the whole thing of this place, this building's so old, it's about to fall apart. That was BS too. In the process of this building project, massive divisions, of course, started popping up in the church. It got to where every Sunday when you went to the church, and I was a little kid, I remember this because I didn't want to go anyway. But it got worse because every Sunday, instead of a sermon, you got 30 minutes of fundraising for the new building project. We weren't even getting no preaching. It was just 30 minutes of fundraising for the building project. The whole thing that sticks out in my mind about this is during, you know, because we had a mix of you know, people that attended, different people on different parts of the social economic scale. Needless to say, we were on the bottom end of the economic scale. We poor people. And I remember they were doing one of these fundraising deals, and I'm a little kid sitting there. And it's just something, because like I said, I was probably 7 years old, maybe. And this still sticks in my head. There was a prominent doctor in town. Obviously, I'm not going to mention his name. I'm sure he's long dead now. But there was a doctor in town that attended that church. And this doctor stood up. I remember to this day, he stood up before the church and started basically berating everybody for not giving enough to the building project. He started waving around. He's like, I wrote a check for like, I think it was like $25,000. And you know, this back then, there was a lot of money. And he's waving this check around going, I wrote a check for this building project for $25,000. You know, y'all can give something. I if I can do this, and he's waving this around. It sticks out in my mind because I remember, even to this day, how off-putting, even as a small child, this was off-putting to me. Needless to say, it didn't motivate anybody. The people, a lot of the people on the lower part of the economic scale that, you know, they weren't making $25,000 a year, and this asshole's up here bragging about how much money he's got. And, you know, I look back on that because, like I say, that incident has stuck in my mind. And I look back on that and I think about how Jesus said, you know, to give your giving discreetly, not to be announcing it on the street corner. And it's an amazing thing because this person was attending church every Sunday, probably three times a week, going on Wednesdays and whenever they opened the doors, this guy was here. And you're going to church. And, you know, one of the basic things in the Bible is Jesus saying, don't be trumpeting your giving on the street corner because you got all the reward you're going to get. You're seeking the praise and approval of men. Be discreet so nobody knows. If you're giving it in that way, the Father in heaven knows, and that's where your treasure is. And just to blow that off and do the very thing Jesus said not to do. What are people thinking? This is related to our story, the events we just read about relayed to us in the book of Acts. Why did this couple do this? Peter said, why? You could have kept the land. I'm not telling you got to sell it and give it to us. It's not being demanded of you. When you sold it, you could have kept all the money, or you could just said, I'm going to give you part of it. But why? Well, leading up to this, what everybody else everybody else in the church community at that time, this is what they were doing. People were so motivated. They were going out and they were selling everything they had and putting it into the community fund to try to build up their little community of, you know, the little congregation. They were giving everything. And people were no doubt talking about it, weren't they? They were talking about, it's like, oh, did you hear so-and-so? He sold that plot of land of his and gave everything. Man, we're growing. We're going to be able to do this and this. And our little community and our fellowship is getting stronger. And I heard so-and-so, he had a flock of goats and he sold the whole flock and gave everything to the church. And no doubt this couple heard that. And they wanted in on that because these people are being praised. They wanted in on that. Had they sold the property and went to the apostles and said, well, we're keeping half of it, I mean, it would have been fine. But then again, what would other people have said? They said, what'd you hear about Ananias? They sold that plot of land and they kept half of it for themselves. You know, like everybody else is selling, giving it all, and they're keeping half for themselves. You see, it was a concern about what other people are saying about you. That's why they were concerned. It wasn't even about giving to the community. They were buying that praise. They wanted everybody. They wanted in on it where everybody's seen, oh, wow, they sold that piece of property and gave it all. See, they're in the group. Hey, they're part of the good people up at the top. They gave everything. Wow, they're really good people. They were worried. They were wanting people to say good things about them. And I think this brings us to the flip side of Jesus's admonition. Jesus' admonition, I'll get it spelled out here in a minute, about giving discreetly. It's not just for your own sake that you do it discreetly. It is for the sake of others to keep them from sinning. If the other members of the early church, if the other members of the congregation had sold their land and quietly given it to the apostles and said, don't tell anybody. I need to talk to y'all later, discreetly when no one's around. And they come up in there and tell the apostles, look, don't tell anybody, but I sold this property. Look, here's the money. Let's build this community. Let's make this happen. If everybody that was doing that had done it quietly to where no one was talking about it, this couple wouldn't have been tempted to sin. You see, this is the flip side. We see when Jesus says, you know, be discreet. Don't let your one hand know what the other hand is doing. You know, don't go trumpeting from the street corner because you're not going to get your reward. That's pretty straightforward, even though apparently not straightforward enough because as in the story I relay to you from my childhood, people just blow that off and still do the same thing. But there is another side to that is in that you can cause other people to sin. And that's what happened in our story here in the book of Acts, because everyone else was talking about it and not being discreet as Jesus had warned. See, it tempted this couple to sin. It tempted this couple to want in on that, but not to the point of giving everything. And if they only gave part of it, then other people are going to look down on them. Other people are going to talk about them and it's going to make them look bad. This couple sinned in lying to the Holy Spirit, as Peter said, but that wasn't the only sin that transpired here. Because the other members of the congregation had made a big deal and everybody knew they were selling property and giving it for the good of the community, that's what tempted this couple to do this. Again, we're answering Peter's question because it doesn't technically get answered as we read through the book of Acts. The answer is this, because they were tempted because everybody was talking about it. If everybody given had just been shut up and been quiet about it and done it on the down low, you know, the apostles could have still told people. They could have said, well, you know, we've had people that have given to the congregation and now we're able to do this. We're able to expand this. We're able to have a little better place to meet. We're going to serve a meal because some of y'all have pitched in and helped out so we can afford to feed y'all today at lunch or whatever the case may be, instead of parading it around. It was just funny because when I read that and started thinking and reflecting on what this meant and to answer Peter's question, it reminded me, like I say, if you go to a regular church, if there's a building project, you will see this kind of behavior come out in people. It's crazy. I could tell some more stories, but we don't have time. I'm not going to get into it. It probably wouldn't be interesting anyway. But if you're regular attending a regular church, nothing will bring out people's nature like a building project. It will. You are in for something. If you like, you go to a church and you've been attending a regular church, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not trying to discourage you. Don't think that. But if you attend a regular church and you think you got a pretty nice little congregation, you might not agree with everything they say, but it's a pretty nice congregation and you like attending it and you feel like y'all have a good clique and a good fellowship and you like the people attending and all that's well and good. But if somebody pops up and say, we're going to undertake a new building project, just buckle in and sit back and watch. Just sit back and watch, because you are not at the end of the, by the time the building project gets completed, you are not going to even recognize at least half the people in the congregation. You'd be like, who are these people? I thought I knew these guys. I just think it's interesting because, like I said, Jesus warned, you know, about giving discreetly, and yet, you know, you can get deeper into that than just what you read and you go, oh yeah, I understand that. But you understand there is a flip side, because it can cause other people. Anyway, it can cause other people to sin. It can cause church leaders to sin. Jesus warned against, you know, people coming in and you know, somebody shows up and they're rich. So you start kissing their ass because they're, you know, oh, he's so-and-so. He's really important. And you start ignoring the other people. We could get on. I'm running out of time, so I could keep rolling. I could make this whole hour just a Christian-specific topic. And believe you me, I think about it sometimes, especially now that I'm doing the Daily Nationalist shows on Mondays and Fridays. It's kind of like, you know, I could just make the whole hour a Christian. The whole show was a Christian-specific segment, just one big segment. I could do it, but I didn't decide to do that. I'm just probably going to keep doing what I'm doing. You know, but still, it is interesting. We could go on and on with this, but we are not, because we're going to wrap up. We're going to run out of time. So I really appreciate y'all joining me this week. I really, as always, I hope you got something out of the whole show, but especially and specifically our sermon here, our Christian specific segment. That's what matters the most to me. And hopefully that's what matters the most to you. And again, I hope you'll catch our great content Monday through Friday on Radio Albion. Dr. Johnson always puts in great work. Kudos to him. I appreciate him continuing to churn out the work that he is doing. Heaven knows I wouldn't want to be doing the shows, and y'all don't want to listen to me 5 days a week. It's enough doing 3 days a week. It's more than I want to do. But I hope you'll get a chance to check it all out. And of course, as always, I hope to see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.